Hello and welcome to another episode of Through the Turnstiles as we take an in-depth look at the lower leagues of Scottish football, joined as always by Muzz and James. How are you both?
I'm all right, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, very good. Thanks for asking. So thank you for joining us this week. We are going back to the tried and trusted format of three smaller episodes, one per division, Championship, League One, League Two. This is obviously the League One edition, so if you're interested in Championship and or League 2, be sure to go out and check those editions as well. They're on YouTube. So after you've liked this video and subscribed to the channel, you can find them on YouTube. Or if you prefer listening to watching, you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as well. So what we're doing this week with League 1, before we come to the journeyman spot of the week, I'll just kind of fill you in on what we're planning to do in this episode. We've got our hands on the data for the league season so far in League 1, about teams and players. So the level of detail it goes into is ridiculous in terms of what percentage the teams attack down the left-hand side, the right-hand side, or through the middle, where the teams aim their corners, most used formations, patterns of play, top assists, top scorers, top pass combinations, absolutely everything. So what we've done is we've kind of picked out the most kind of interesting or relevant points, and we're just going to have a chat about it. And hopefully, as if you're a fan of any of the teams in League One, you'll take one or two wee tidbits of information away that you might not have known prior. And you might also see some things from when you've been watching games previously, and what we're saying kind of hopefully rings a bell and you can recognise things that you're talking about. If, though, there is anything that we don't touch on that you're interested in seeing or hearing about your team, then pop it in the comments below this video on YouTube or get us on Twitter at TurnstilesThe. Either comment or send us a DM and we'll be sure to touch on them for next week's episode. So that's the plan. If you haven't already, the other thing I would advise doing is checking out the discussion we had with Stuart Brown, Stirling Albion chairman, last week, where he goes into the effect the enforced suspensions had on his club. Talks about how the 20 clubs came together to submit a proposal for resuming play that went to the government and Scottish football authorities. And it's a really good wide-ranging discussion about all things kind of lower league football. So fans of any teams will definitely take something out of that. Muzz, before we get into the stats, give us a gentleman spot of the week, please.
This week's contribution, DAFC. Is saying that he spoke to Johnny Russell outside the Dancing in Coat Bridge a couple of years ago, probably Christmas 2018. Both of us were absolutely pished. Can't remember what was spoken about, but can remember him laughing, probably because I'm a massive VL.
Is that Johnny Russell also not a name I've heard for a while, or calling it the Dancing? So is there any more to that story, or is that just...
That was it, to be honest, for this episode's Journeyman Spot of the Week. But credit where credit's due. It's probably better than the Jamie Langfield one, but not quite as mundane.
It's obviously also giving Johnny something to think about as he meanders back over the Atlantic.
Off on a tangent here.
Stuart Finlay.
Who's going to sign for Philadelphia?
Stuart Finlay, 25-year-old.
I'd love that, man.
What is it with left-footed defenders on the cusp of the Scotland squad, i.e. Danny Wilson, just shooting off to America and just staying out there? So,
left-foot strikers as well, Johnny Russell.
Philadelphia is actually a really nice place, to be fair. So he's moved, whereas Danny Wilson's going to Colorado. So I'd rather be in Stuart Finlay's coppers than.
Thanks to the DAFC fan that's brought this upon us.
Yes, no, thanks very much. So, as always, if you've got a journeyman spot of the week that can match or beat that, get in touch with us. The only way we're going to see them in the medium to short term is through the comments on Twitter or the comments on this video. So please.
Probably long term as well, let's be honest.
Let's not rule anything out. Please get in touch with those ways if you've got any journeyman spots of the week. So when we had a quick look at them, Muzz, I think one of the things that caught your eye in League One was the kind of percentage, average possession of the ball teams had had. And was it any surprise to you? You've obviously seen more League One than myself or James. So like with the eye test from what you've seen, I'm sure Cove Rangers were top of the possession table, followed by Partick Thistle, I think. So Cove Rangers, 60% possession, the average, 59.9. Partick Thistle averaging 55%. Is that what you saw when you were at games, them dominating the ball?
Yeah, it rang quite true, that possession stat. It's quite accurate to what I've experienced when I've been at games. Partick Thistle, especially. they vary their style of play quite a lot. And as you can see from their formation data, that they just tell us what
they play. Sorry, roughly what formations they've played, because it tells us that as well, just for any of the viewers watching.
Yeah, it tells us that for half of their games, roughly, they've played a 4-4-1-1. And for a quarter of their games, they've dabbled with a 4-3-3. And for the other quarter, it's been a 4-2-3-1. And I did get in a wee bit of a debate with a Partick Thistle fan about how they do line up, and was happily, you know, that Partick Thistle fan was adamant that they've never strayed from a 4-4-2 or a 4-4-1-1 when he's seen them. And that's absolutely, well, that's absolutely correct, to the point where, well, half their games they've lined up like that. But it shows the I think they're quite versatile that with that shape. Those shapes you can morph in and out of. You can be 4-4-1, but you can be 4-3-3 off the ball. Sorry, you can be 4-3-3, but you can be 4-4-1-1 off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly going back to their possession, a lot of their play centres throughout the team. There's a lot of passing throughout the team. There's a lot of passing across the back four. There's a lot of going up the sides, and there's a lot of going in and out of Bannigan and Doherty. So they do vary their style a lot, which is what I quite like about Partick Thistle. They're willing to mix it in many different ways, and they also, they're first for recoveries as well. So they're first on the table for recoveries.
Is this Partick, not Cole? Sorry, Partick.
This is Partick. Yeah, yeah. They do the dirty work as well, and they've got two players who are first and second in the table for crossing. So you've got Joe Cardle putting in the most crosses in the league, and Ryan Williamson, second most, both
see when,
right
see
side.
See, when you've seen Cardle, has Cardle played off the left or the right when you've seen him?
The right. And it's been Penrith on the left when I've seen him. But Conor Murray can drift out. That's why I was getting confused as to how they were lining up.
Because they've built most of their attacks down the left-hand side, going like the data, the 40% almost down the left-hand side, which I thought... Given Cardle plays on the right, I was surprised at that. You wonder if he comes more central and contributes to central attacks, which is why that brings the right down, if that makes sense.
And I don't know how many of the stats come from free kicks as well, because he will go over to the other side of the pitch and take free kicks, but I think it's probably it will be crosses from open play, I would imagine. So you're absolutely right. That's thrown up a really interesting point there, that both Cardle and Williamson are right-sided players, but Thistle do attack mostly down the left. It is only by a small percentage.
Yeah.
37% of their attacks. I don't want to get bogged down in numbers.
What surprised me, James, sorry Muz, without cutting your grass here, is talking about possession. So they break it down into how long each team has the ball per possession. So is it 5 to 15 seconds, blah blah blah. Now, without going into too much detail about that. So there's 45 times that Cove Rangers kept the ball, James, for about a minute. It's 45 seconds or more, and 34 times Partick Thistle have kept the ball for longer than 45 seconds. That's a hell of a long time in a game. So both those teams are obviously really adept at keeping possession.
It seems as well that they're not shy in terms of just keeping it and moving it side to side. I think a lot of their passes, we think they're going to be quite longer passes perhaps in that league, and they're relatively average in terms of the distance covered of the ball when passing. But they also forward passes, lateral passes are up in the, well, Cover almost touching per 90 minutes, 150 just sideways passes. So when you're keeping it for 45 seconds, sideways passes is the easy way to do it. So they always, Cove, look to be probing forward. Their sort of paths aren't always just back to front. They're happy to keep it side to side. They're happy to move it that way, which suggests they have a style of play that is reflective of where they would want to be in that division way.
They're also first in the table for progressive passes, in other words, sort of productive passes. So outside what James is talking about, the side-to-side passes and through balls, so your attempted killer balls. So they obviously are trying to play a certain way. 415-odd passes for every 90 minutes has on top of the passing table as well.
Like that's decent, because see if you're watching, remember you used to watch Champions League back in the day, and it would pop up like when Barcelona were playing, like passes so far. I'm sure it was about 600-700. So on the pitches they're playing on, like against in a league that's notorious for like high pressing and stuff, that's a decent number, isn't it?
And they're actually first overall for crosses and dribbles. So they're obviously not just trying to pass through teams as well. They're trying to put balls in for Meganson, who, surprise, surprise, has the most shots in the league with 27. So Strachan and Fivey, first and second in the table in the whole league for amount of passes made as well. So there's obviously always going to be a Cove player high in the table, as a team they're passing that many times. But
with most of the average positions as well, you can actually see a basic almost straight line. Obviously you're talking about your wingers and your fullbacks maybe sitting a wee bit higher than the centre halves. You can almost see though, oh, that team definitely plays a 4-4-2. And you can also, away from the stats and talking about real life, you can see why Muzz and this Park Thistle fan were debating, is it a 4-2-3-1? Is it a 4-3-3? Is it 4-4-2? Because actually, in reality, when you're playing football, you never overly see formations. Even if you're talking League One, you just try and get all the players into one area, try and win. If you're going long for goal kicks, try and get the first ball, try and get the second ball and the flick-ons. But when you take that away and you look at the heat maps or the average positions on the data we've got, the Cove players are relatively well positioned, almost a reasonably equal distance from each other. It's hard to say, oh, this is definitely a 4-2-3-1, this is definitely a 4-4-2, because they're just, it shows that they're making room for each other. It shows that those lateral, forward, progressive passes, whatever you want to call them, they're always on. You look at a team like Partick Thistle, they're two centre forwards, or their striker and player in behind, basically on top of each other. Their dots are overlapping. At Cove, they're spread out, they're distanced, and you can see the passes they're making. So when you look at those sort of statistics or those data points together, it seems to me from the outside in, yeah, that they play relatively attractive football. They get the ball down, they don't mind going through the middle, Muzz is saying they play out wide, but they're also playing at a decent tempo. They're also holding the ball for a long time. I don't know, Muzz, did you touch on their dribbles? Are they successful dribblers in Cove?
Just that they were first in the table for successful dribbles in the whole league. So, which would maybe go against the grain for a passing team, you know, a team that have got so many. Such a high percentage of passes, sorry.
I think that shows though that they're not shy about being on the ball, because I think what we see, like Andy touched on with the Barcelona, is you have to play like Barcelona and you have to pass the ball, and even if it's side to side, as long as you keep it. Or you look at a team like Stoke or the Stoke of old, and you just have to punt it long and get after it. Whereas it maybe seems that Cove, the emphasis is just keep the ball, and if you can get it, someone, get it, someone. If you can't, pass it. But it doesn't matter, because it shows that they're not just punting it, or they're not just passing it, and they're stressed and they're sort of reacting. They're wanting to do something with it. And I think that's quite an impressive feat for me, because if you're a team that's not been in the football pyramid that long, you would maybe anticipate them getting into the League Two and then into League One and just being like, right, let's stay here, let's just lump it when we've got the chance. But no, let's hold the ball 45 seconds. Let's be the most successful team at crossing, team at dribbling. So
one of the teams I was going to touch on, Buzz, and asked you, because I think you've seen them a couple of times, is Montrose. Now, they've got the biggest, almost lopsided four areas of attack. So what it does, it breaks it down. Attacks down the left, attacks down the middle, attacks down the right. Now, generally, most teams sit 30%, 35%, 35% or whatever, or there's very few percentage in it. But see, looking at Montrose, they're only a quarter down the left-hand side. So 25% down the left, 37 down the middle, and whatever percent's remaining. 26, sorry, down the left, 37, 37. Now, see, for me, Steve's has been decent. In fact, we had him in our team this season, didn't we, from left back, but it doesn't look like they're going down that side as a strength. Did you notice that? I don't think it'd be if you didn't.
No, that's an example of one of the stats that contradicted just a game or two. I've seen mm-hmm. Montrose this season, where Steves was prominent, and who's the boy that went back to Dundee United? Koch. Mochrie. Get muddled up with him and Cochran. Mochrie, who was like sort of playing left of the second bank of four, the midfield four.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of combination play between Steves and Mochrie.
Well, do you know what the highest one of the highest lines on the Montrose kind of pass map is left back into centre midfield. Whereas if you look at right back, the right back tends to play the winger or the striker. So yeah, Steve is obviously trying to play a bit, and maybe he's getting on the ball a lot, but he's playing inside. It's then going out to the right hand side and getting delivered. So the attack looks as though it's come down the right, but Steve has obviously been heavily involved in the build up on the left. So his passes to, like you said, Mochrie inside the park for the ball then to go out to the right looks like that's one of their kind of preferred methods of attack.
Yeah, you're probably right. Rather than Steve's actually
being the one that
like triangle passing up the line and mm-hmm. hitting the byline like that. Yeah, because. Montrose are second in the table for crosses, for attacking. Mm-hmm. So you're right; they may be coming in from both sides as well, rather than just up that with a focus on that left hand side.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting actually, because let's say Steves was in our team of the season, as well as Jack Hamilton was in it, and it looks as though looking at East Fife, they look very long and direct. They're almost an even spread between left, central, and through the right-hand side. And James, that's obviously, they've just gone to play into their strength, which obviously is Hamilton, and maybe just going longer early rather than trying to build up from the back.
Yeah, a lot of their play focuses on that sort of final third area. It just looks like goalkeeper gets the ball, like you say, and then they try and get it up and try and play off it. They've played...
Yeah, but half for ball possession as well. So that leads itself, like you say, to them obviously going longer and direct.
And I think they're up there, just with the old scanner of the eyes, where the goals come from. With a team that have got most of their goals within the 6-yard box. They've got a couple, maybe 3-4 outside the box, but most of them just seem to be in the 6-yard box, which suggests you're right in terms of that's the area they want to play and they want to get the ball into that bit. Not necessarily going to go wide and into Hamilton, as you might anticipate, although it does happen. But it does seem to be that central sort of driving force in them, and whether that's long, that seems to be the game they're at.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, Muzz, because the stats are definitely backing it here. Because East Fife, we've spoke before, maybe they kind of go direct and longer, but the stats are backing it. Top half for crosses, lowest for dribbles. Top half for passes to the final third, so that's passes from obviously back to front. Deep completions, which is a pass to somebody obviously from deep, second in the league. So, you know, sometimes you see something and you think, you see stats and you're going, that doesn't marry up, but it seems like East Fife have kind of true to form with the stats and the eye test, I suppose, by watching them.
Yeah, definitely. And even from a defensive point of view, I think they're the second highest, most intense presses in the league.
Yeah.
Second for winning defensive duels as a team. So that marries with what I've seen as well with East Fife in terms of, well, they showed that against Airdrie, for example, when against the run of play, Airdrie went there and lost quite badly, I think 2-0, but it was just quite a real... lackluster performance from Airdrie, and I think that was possibly off the back of one of their big wins, maybe the big win against Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons was that East Fife just didn't give Airdrie a second in the ball. So they're second only to Montrose. So going back to Montrose, for in terms of pressing intensity, offensive duels, success rate, Montrose are also top.
Highest for number of touches in the opposition box as well, Montrose, I noticed, which is interesting.
I think that lends itself to them being like such an all-round package, Montrose. Mm-hmm. So strong defensively, but they've got a lot going for them offensively. And then if you pull that all together, you look at the basic goals scored, goals against, they're both high numbers. So just there really are Montrose. If you sort of average out all the stats, it does give the reflection of what they are, which is a really robust outfit, really, you know, in every department.
And James, I want to be remiss of us not to give you some credit. Now, I think in the episode where we identified one position each team needs to strengthen in January, shameless plug, if you're watching this and you've not watched that, go and check it out. You identified centre midfield for Falkirk as being one of the areas that we felt they could maybe do a wee bit more in and get more of a threat. Now, looking at the Falkirk pass map, they've played 4-4-2 80% of the time. 4-4-1 3% of the time. That's obviously when Much gets sent off for elbowing a bit to obviously readjust. And then they've played 4-1-4-1, I think 13% of the time, something like that. Going back to it, you identified centre midfield as potentially a position of weakness. Now, looking at their pass map, they play round the back into the winger, who then kind of dribbles and has a goal. They play through one centre midfielder, but whoever plays on the right-hand side tends not to be involved in the build-up in the midfield. So that suggests you've seen there's an area there that they need to strengthen, and that's obviously been backed up by the kind of pass maps and everything as well. So do you want to bask in your glory briefly? Very briefly.
Yeah, I think that's massive from me, obviously. But I think it's more massive from Falkirk, because it is an area perhaps of weakness, like anticipated. And I would say, was it Gomez I said played with, I think, like seven different combinations or something?
Gomez was kind of the constant.
I feel like, and this is from the sort of odd angles you get when watching highlights and things, I think he's the one that would regularly play on that left-hand side. So he's the one that's going to be consistently there. And that, you know, you can get a bit too tied down with the stats and a bit too like, oh, this pass happens more than anything. But I think, like I said previously, if you translate that into real life, if you're playing anywhere else but in the middle of the park and you know you've got Gomez and one other, you know what he's going to do. So you're going to rely on giving him the ball. Whereas,
yeah, because Gomez is six
in the league. A couple of times, you don't know what their game plan is. You maybe can't trust them. You see it all the time when maybe new players coming in or strikers that are a wee bit hot and cold. They maybe don't get the ball as often as they would want, which is going to help them. And it would certainly cement that other spot for another centre midfielder if they got the ball and could do something with it. But if you're playing in that Falkirk team, who are you going to give it to? The guy that consistently plays every week, or another guy that comes in and out? It's going to be Gomez. But what concerns me, like you touched on, is there's not a large amount of midfield to forward passing going on. That's not something that seems to be happening consistently. It happens. There's certainly loads of areas where they do pass into the striker, but that's not happening enough, perhaps. And that's fine if it's not their style of play, but if it's not happening because it can't happen, I think that's where you need to actually watch games. And if you're involved in the hierarchy at Falkirk, that's maybe where the concern lies. And you go, yeah, we do need a midfielder that's going to link us into the strikers more.
See, against the Bombers, the third bottom in kind of loose ball duels, so that's if it's like second balls kind of across the park, and the second bottom in interceptions, again, you'd imagine most of those would take place in the middle of the park. So it sounds like maybe against the ball, they could be doing a more physical presence in there next to Gomez as well. Another interesting stat for Falkirk was the most passes to the final third, second in the league, was Paul Dixon. So it seems as though he's just getting it centre half of left back and just kind of shelling it. Interestingly, Ross Davidson from East Fife was in there, which we spoke about them kind of going long. But also Ricky Foster, just third for just lumps to the final third. But anyway,
yeah,
Falkirk middle of the park and Paul Dixon. Is that maybe because Dixon's got nobody to play in the middle, you know?
Well, Dixon's been, he's been operating in as a centre half for majority of the season. So I think they do mix it up, Falkirk, so it doesn't surprise me to see that. They do try and release Dowds and Salmon in behind long to catch defences off guard. So it's definitely a tactic they use. And they do. We've already identified in the show that they, well, James has identified the lack of a bit of strength in the centre of midfield. And for me, I think I've used this word before, but it's dig. They just lack a bit of dig. And when you look at their personnel right throughout, a lot of good footballers, a lot of solid professionals and stuff like that. And they're quite a well balanced team. They're I mean, they're top of the league, but the for me, they lack a bit of that dig in midfield, and I think that's shown in the stats as well.
And one stat that will not surprise you is Thomas Robert second in league for most dribbles.
No, doesn't surprise me at all. And there's a big kind of a heat pathway from the left hand side of Airdrie's midfield as well, going up that left hand side. Sorry.
I had a look at Airdrie actually in a wee bit more detail because I've seen them a couple of times live and I wanted to check, does it kind of match up? And like you say, Airdrie look to play around the back. All four of the back four seem to have decent possession. But it seems when the right back gets the ball, then goes to right midfield. When the left back gets the ball, it goes left midfield or left centre midfield. Now, we spoke before about Sabatini playing in the middle of the park there, and with maybe Mackay or Kerr, who maybe aren't natural ball players or more ball hunters, for want of a better word. So the stats seem to suggest Sabatini is the one that plays off the left, but they'll kind of build up through him, but not through Kerr or Mackay, which again backs kind of what I've seen.
It reflects that stat as well, that about Josh Kerr covering the most ground, in I think all divisions, maybe, or certainly
it was up there, wasn't it?
Yeah. Championship downwards. So you're not going to be doing that on the ball all the time. You're going to be doing the majority of that work off the ball. So
equal attacks down the left and right. And then less through the middle, which again, from seeing Airdrie, I'd probably back that as being true. One other thing that kind of stood out, I'm just kind of trying to find it here, is Jules. Now, we spoke before about Connell, the boy on loan from Killy at Airdrie, offering something different, like more of a physical presence, either through the middle or off a side when they're going kind of more longer and more direct. He's second in Jules, like headers or whatever in the league. So again, it shows that Airdrie are happy to go longer to him when needed.
Yeah, definitely. That's
second only to Jack Hamilton, which again reinforces our East 5 thought process.
I think that's what made him such a shrewd signing, because he offers a plan B to Airdrie's usual kind of attacking from wide play.
Yeah.
A lot of the fans seem to bogged down in this idea that it's long ball all the time, but that's not always the case. But it can be beneficial in that league, let's face it.
Yeah, you need to mix it. Interestingly, in possession, actually, talking about.
Interestingly, that. Second in the table for key passes, Connell as well. So, presume comes under the umbrella of assists as well. So
moving on then, talking about possession, Muzz, one of the things that surprised me was Clyde in the top half for possession of the ball.
Yeah, that is quite surprising, but I think they've got a pretty distinct style, Clyde, where they do try to play football on the ground. They don't really play many long balls. Their only attacking outlet is David Goodwillie, so they will try and release him at any opportunity. It will be a long ball sometimes, but they do try and pass through the team a lot of times. I've seen them. There's no real... When you look at their formation and their kind of passing heat map, there's no real rhyme or reason to it. You look at Partick Thistles and it's a really like nice symmetrical round the back in the middle, and you've got a real balance between Doherty and Bannigan releasing out to Cardle and Penrith too, you know, so they're going in and out, and like you say, mixing up long sometimes as well through Foster.
It's interesting that
Clyde is kind of like all over the place. There's no real pattern to the way they play.
It's interesting because no team has played three at the back for any kind of long spell. Looking at the kind of numbers, Clyde, interestingly, the longest they've played any formation for is 29% of the season. So they've chopped and changed constantly, but never gone to a back three. Now we've sat here and felt their defence is particularly their weakness at Clyde. So you're not surprised they've never like kind of gambled with a back three to try and show it up?
Possibly because I've thought they've been quite weak at fullback. However, having said that, I think Jamie Bain is up there for defence and defensive stats, whether it's need to find it. Defensive duels,
yeah.
He's fourth, you know, so he's he's doing.
You maybe would have seen that by watching,
no, certainly not. And again, they appear quite high on the table. For example, shots blocked. They're second in the league for the most shots blocked. But that's all. That all these stats come with. You've got to realize that
caveats.
They're going to be blocking a lot. Yeah, they're going to be blocking a lot of shots because they're going to be getting a lot of shots at them, more shots than other teams. So you've got like Tom Lang and Rumsby chucking limbs in front of balls all day. You know, fouls as well. They'll commit a lot of fouls. They're second in the league for fouls. But I think that's just partly because of the pressure they get put under rather than the style of play that Danny Lennon has implemented there, or trying to implement. Defensive duels, they're like mid-table in their defensive duels and offensive duels, so they can mix it. But the possession stat, I think it actually doesn't surprise me because it's more than like some teams who are doing better than them, like Dumbarton and Peterhead, mm-hmm. but they play different styles, which are proving to be more effective for those teams than Clyde's more possession-based game is.
Mm-hmm. And just before I come on to James about Clyde, just very briefly, I'd like to touch on Peterhead. Two players in the top five for defensive duels, McCarthy and Kyle Bailey, who we've spoken about before. And also, I thought you might like this one, Scott Brown does the most sliding tackles per 90 minutes.
Ah, is there anything he can't do? No, it doesn't surprise me about those aerial duels. I like Kyle Bailey. I like him as a signing. I've talked about he's got a real profile for that league. So, doesn't surprise me that they're mixing it in those kind of stats.
And Peterhead relatively consistent with that 4-1-4-1 that you've spoken about when you've seen Peterhead before.
4-1-4-1, 4-2-3-1 sometimes.
Least amount of passes around their back four, but they play a bit in the middle to front.
Yeah, you can see some direct lines. I was expecting not so much for them, but likes of Dumbarton, just one big thick black line up the middle from the goalkeeper.
To be fair, they do have a straight long line. Who plays up top for Dumbarton? That'll be on the end of that.
You've got Robert Jones and Denny Johnson, so you've got two lampposts to try and hit there, you know.
And to be fair to Duffy, James, I'll come here a bit Clyde in a wee minute, but Muzz again, and just while we're on Dumbarton, to be fair to Duffy, a lot of people had them down to maybe struggle this season, but he's rolled out 4-4-2 more than half the time. So fair play to him, he's not going defensive 4-5-1, 4-1-4-1. He's playing two strikers for over 50% of the time.
Yeah, and he's done that throughout his managerial career, really. He did it at Morton to great effect as well. So there's a lot to be said for a more simplified game. We're sitting here like a bunch of nerds, like ripping apart stats for every single team. But I wonder if, you know, there's a different side to the game, and I wonder if Jim Duffy studies this kind of stuff in as much detail, or does he just go with what he knows? I don't know. I'm not saying he doesn't or he does, but it's just interesting to see how each team has its own kind of personality, and some are more successful than others.
They do have the least amount of recoveries of the ball in the final third in the league. So while Johnson and Thompson, wasn't it? Did you say, sorry?
Denny Johnson and Robert Jones.
Jones. Well, they might be good in there. It looks like they do no pressing against the ball.
Yeah, I think sometimes they'll play James Aitken up, or I think even Frizzell. So you might get that more from them, but not those big guys. Their second
most used formation is 4-4-1-1, which suggests if he's not going to up front, it'll be Frizzell or somebody just off with him behind. James, sorry, I was going to come to you about Clyde, because I know you'd kind of picked out a bit or two about Clyde.
Yeah, I think it's just in the formations. It's reflective, I think, of where they are in the league, that they don't have a formation that is head and shoulders used more than any other one.
I'm going to jump in there, James, because that's one thing I wanted to contest about this, actually, was according to this, Clyde have used 4-4-2 the most this season. When I've
only by
seen
about 4%, I think, wasn't it?
Aye, but I've rarely known them to have deviated from that 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, whatever you want to call it.
Well, that's where I was heading, because
sorry, James.
You see, it's a better better reflection that you've said rather than me, my bogged down with percentages. But this, what we were looking at, shows us the top three most used formation. 4-4-2, 29%, 4-2-3-1, 25.3%, 4-1-4-1, 21.9%. Now, if you add all of them up, that doesn't get you anywhere near 100%. That's 76-odd%. So you're then looking at, well, what other formation do they use? And if you take the remaining percentages, you get 24%, which would suggest if they went to a 4-3-3, that's going to be their third most used formation. So you get 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, rather than 4-1-4-1. So like I say, I get bogged down in all these percentages and formations, but what it tells me actually is they must be using at least five different formations throughout the, albeit limited, games they're playing. So they must be relatively fluid within their games. And so it, even if it appears to us that they are playing a 4-3-3 rather than 4-2-3-1, 4-1, whatever, that inconsistency suggests that it is reflective that they are where they are in the league, because they're not doing as well as they could be. They're not sticking to that formation that you maybe see some of the other teams that are doing better are going, this is a formation we play. This is a style we play at. So I think the fact that they're sitting with less than a third of their minutes played in a single formation suggests to me, aye, they are in the bother they could be. Even if they had, and you touched on Mopar, they're not playing five at the back. Even if they've tried it, they've not tried it long enough to go, this is how defensive we're going to be. We talked about them being quite static. Their passing and movement and sort of all the data points on that didn't suggest that they're anything but that. So the only real thing that I wanted to pick up on and touch on along with something else that I'll round up towards the end is that if you're watching the games, because it's all very good, like Muzz said, us sitting with all this information. If you're a fan who's just sitting watching a Clyde game, have a look and see what they're doing. Are they playing 4-4-2? Are they trying to shift things around? Where are their players going? Are they getting their wingers playing wide like chalk in the boots, or are they coming in nice and tight and changing into a different formation? Watch and see that, because what we want to do, not just give you the stats, but show you things that you can actually take into the next game, whenever it's going to be, that you're watching Clyde and saying, actually, you know what, they are shifting between this. It's not a consistent style of play. They're playing Partick Thistle, who play, or playing Falkirk, sorry, who play 80% of their time in a 4-4-2. It's that sort of things that we'd like to be able to enable you guys to go out and actually pick up on and watch yourself. So, yeah, the only main thing I had on Clyde was that inconsistency across the formations probably reflects the fact that they're inconsistent in picking up points in the league.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And just to kind of round off then, the team I've not touched on yet, talking about consistency, Muzz, for Athletic have rolled out a 4-4-2 over 70% of the time. So kudos to Stuart Malcolm. We've given Jim Duffy credit for always going two up top. Looks like Forfar are doing much the same, albeit maybe not with the same amount of success as Dumbarton have had.
Yeah, again, I must just be watching them at the wrong times, but I've seen more of a 4-2-3-1 with Forfar.
Was up there, I think. That was their second most used die.
But only 10% according to this, which I don't know, but there's been that back four that they've had to obviously muck about with due to unforeseen circumstances. And it's always been Irvin and Thomas sitting in front of that back four for me. And then you've had Hoti in the middle with Shepherd, a combination of Shepherd, Robertson.
See, on the heat map of the average positions, it does have the front two, like that one behind and one in front. So they've maybe taken Hoti as a striker,
second but just strike, kind of dropped him into
it.
I was going to say they look to be a 4-4-2, but actually, if you, again, like, it doesn't actually matter where people stand because they don't stand in that formation, but you could also interpret it to be their wingers are pushed quite high up. And I think maybe the data that's been drawn out of the average positions that their strikers are next to each other, so they are playing as a 2.
How tight are their midfield 2 as well? And deep, which backs what you say about the to sitters, because they're relatively deep in the average position compared to, like, for example,
I think Montrose is a good example of where they're not. Montrose has got a sitter, definitely, and then higher up and sort of floating to be a more creative midfielder as well. So they're Cove as well, and Muzz touched on Partick Thistle being a bit more sort of nicely spaced out, but Peterhead
That reflects Montrose's shape quite well as well, their heat map, because They've got Watson kind of sitting deep as that one between the two banks of four. And then probably the likes of Cammy Ballantyne in a more advanced position. But sorry, going back to Forfar, yeah, they were always 4-4-2 under Jim Weir. Certainly, that was quite a successful formula for them. But no, it's interesting to see a few direct passes from the goalkeeper as well towards the front.
If Doris is there, it's what you're going to do, isn't it?
True.
So I think that'll round everything up there. I've got stats on the brain. Unless there's anything massively pressing that either of you wanted to mention that we haven't spoken about before, we'll kind of wrap it up there.
I just wanted to touch on something else that I think we can offer folk when they're watching the games to consider. And it is when we touched on East Fife and Montrose and Falkirk, sort of back to back to back. If you're watching these games, it might be reflective of what you're seeing, that they're losing the ball, which is perhaps not something you consider sort of the ramifications of. They're losing the ball almost the majority of their time in their final third. So if you're watching a Falkirk play East Fife, you should be watching relatively attacking football. But also what you want to be considering is, in what manner do they lose the ball? So is the Falkirk style of play, where they lose it in the final third, completely different from East Fife? Look at Falkirk, who prefer to go out wide, whereas East Fife like to mix it or are capable of mixing it through the middle. The statistics tell us they're both losing it in the final third, so as they're attacking the box. But if you're watching those games or watching those teams play each other, are they playing a different formation or different style of play where that happens? And then if you look at where they recover the ball, both of them don't recover the ball in the final third. So again, something else that you might want to be looking at is, if you lose the ball in the final third, are you going to be to use a Premiership example, a Liverpool, where you go and press straight away because you've lost it? Whereas both these teams win the ball back the most time. Falkirk, it's relatively even between their own sort of defensive third and in the middle, whereas East Fife win the ball back mostly in their own defensive third, so in their own box. So they both lose the ball relatively often in the final third, but then they come back and they like to sit in a wee bit deeper. Other teams you might watch and say, actually, you lose it in the final third and they win it in the final third. So they lose it and then they press it. Or you might notice some teams trying to build up to the middle, but lose the ball more often in the middle of the park, or lose the ball in the final third because it's just a shell forward. So it's very easy to sit and talk about statistics here, but if we're talking about two relatively similar statistics, numbers and percentages, teams that lose the ball in the final third, how do they do it? What are you watching for? Are you watching for crosses into the ball, crosses into the box that get blocked, crosses into the ball that get headed away? Like, what's the different styles and formations that we're seeing? And then what do they do afterwards? Those are the sort of things that, you know, the three of us go to games and watch for as well. So, like I say, I just wanted to end sort of what I've got to offer on this by saying, here's what you might want to go and see yourself if you're watching these games when we finally get back in or back onto the telly.
That's a good point. And I think it kind of rounds up, what we're talking about. And are, as fans watching, are you seeing what we are, the stats are showing or telling us, from kind of looking at the games overall? So, as always, if there's anything we've not mentioned your team in certain areas that you'd like to see or hear about, then let us know in the comments or, like I say, on Twitter or anything like that. And we can speak about it next week. I think with the shutdown, you know, we're open to suggestions for anything you guys want to hear about. This has even got, you know, where do most teams play their corners to? Is it on top of the goalkeeper? Is it to the edge of the box? Do they play short, etc.? So we can go into as much or as little detail as you like. We can also do a player-specific one. That might be one that we maybe look to do next week rather than kind of teams, as we look at the top five players for shots, dribbles, tackles, headers, whatever. So we'll be out with some sort of form of content next week. Like I say, that can be influenced by you between now and then. If not, we'll come up with something I'm sure you'll enjoy. So I new content every Thursday, 12 p.m. Let's say if you've not done so already, if you could like the video and subscribe to the channel on YouTube if you're watching or listening on there, that would help us massively. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next week. Cheers.